that means it's Pride Month, so happy Pride Month to everyone. And I'm pleased to have as my guest Barb Farrar, who's the Executive Director of the LGBTQ Center of Southeastern Wisconsin. Welcome, Barb.
Thanks, Jenny. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. So tell us a little bit about the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for a happy Pride Month to you. The LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin was formed in 2009. So we're on the older side of a lot of small centers. Originally started as a place for people to meet and to have access to internet and to just meet people. And over the years, we have really evolved into more of an advocacy organization and one that really prides itself on being small but mighty, I think is the best way to put it. We have a small staff. We currently have a staff of four, but there's been periods where we've either had no executive director, one staff member, two staff members, but we keep kind of eking up in terms of our budget and our scope. So currently, our four major programs are support groups, and we have seven that meet almost on a weekly basis. We have Safe Zone training, and so we go into schools, municipalities, private industry, churches, and do kind of a deep dive on sexual orientation, gender identity. We have two new programs that we're really excited about, one of which is a youth program, so really making sure that our youth have kind of a one-on-one relationship with an adult who has a similar lived experience that can support them in ways that maybe family or schools can't. And we also have a program called Colorful and Connected, which brings our communities of color together. This is a black and brown led organization. This is the black and brown led program that is designed to bring people together for networking, for support, shared experience, friendship, and to develop leadership skills. We're really grateful to have that program.
Wonderful. Now, do you serve Racine and Kenosha counties, or primarily Racine? How does that work?
Yeah, so our physical location is in Racine. Most of our programs have a virtual component, so we have people from all over the state and even out of state, Illinois, Michigan, Iowa. People attend our support groups virtually. We are in the process of trying to have more of a physical presence in Kenosha. We've got a few grants out to do that. Our founders, if you will, actually created a charter for us to support Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth counties. And if you can imagine all the different municipalities, school districts, social service organizations being duplicated in three different counties, that's a tall order for a small staff. So we do our best, but we're certainly available virtually for everyone.
That's really beneficial to have that virtual option. So that's great. And you said you just have a small staff of four. That must really pull them in a lot of directions.
Yes, we have Patricia Castillo is our youth coordinator, and they are just doing an amazing job wrangling in some young people and really having an impact on who they are as they go through their personal journeys and just being really supportive and an advocate. And then we have Venus Randall, who is our Colorful and Connected coordinator. Venus lives in Milwaukee, but already has a lot of experience working in various salons to bring black and brown queer communities together in different spaces in both Chicago and Milwaukee. So we're fortunate to have Venus. And Jasmine Alvarez lives in Kenosha and is an amazing person. She's our operations manager, and she really keeps us together, social media, coordinating grants, a lot of the kind of backbone pieces that we're just really grateful for. And I've been the executive director since 2018, so I do everything else.
Right. So Barb, tell me how you got involved in the center and decided to pursue executive director.
Yeah. So I was born in Iowa, and then I moved west for college. And I lived in San Francisco for about 18 years, and, you know, which is kind of the queer mecca of the U.S. And, you know, I came out there when I was 23. That was 1989, so dating myself a little bit. But that was a really beautiful time when you just work side by side with lots of LGBT people, and it wasn't a big deal to come out even back then in San Francisco. And then, you know, I ended up moving to Kenosha for a relationship, and in 2008. My background is in human resources and organizational development. I've worked in nonprofit sectors, technology, education. So when you put all those pieces together, I had a foundation, and I had some management experience. So it I ended up being on the board of directors. And then it was time to hire an executive director, and it just kind of snowballed from there. But it's the best job I've ever had, and I am really lucky to have this position.
That's wonderful. Great. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you talked about San Francisco and it being a friendly community for LGBTQ plus people. There's actually a municipal equity index. Now, while that doesn't necessarily mean that those communities that rank high are great supportive places, but they do have the policies in place, if I understand correctly. And that is a review done annually by the Human Rights Campaign. And it's my understanding that Racine County did very well. Kenosha's got some work to do. And I guess Walworth, a little too small to make the index. So can you tell me a little bit about that Human Rights Campaign Municipal Equity Index and what you see?
Yeah, exactly. When we think about Human Rights Campaign, they're one of the number one supporters of the LGBTQ community. You've probably seen the stickers. It's blue with two horizontal yellow lines. And that stands for equality there. So there are, it's kind of an interesting process how this works. So the Mayor Mason, who's the mayor of Racine, on his second day in office, found out that Racine had about a 37 or 32 score. And second day in office, pulled us in, never met him before, and he said, "This is not okay. We can't have this. We're going to see a change in my administration." And from that day on, literally, we have been working side by side with the city of Racine to improve those numbers. Racine is now one of three cities that has a perfect score of 100, and they are Milwaukee, Madison, and Racine. This has been about 4 or 5 years in the making. It is not an easy process. The Municipality Equity Index is a self-assessment. So you go through your own city's policies. It's all in the city. And you either create policies that allow you to get higher scores, and by doing so, you get points. So it's a scorecard, really. That said, the policies that they want you to put into place are really, really important to the LGBTQ community. So if people think it's just a scorecard and just a number, they're missing the point, because it takes so much time and dedication to really have an increase in your score. It takes community activism. It's a big deal. And it's just for cities that are over a certain size, maybe like 65, 70,000, something like that. So we don't have any towns in Walworth County that that would qualify at this point.
Mm-hmm. So Racine has a perfect score, 100 points. Mm-hmm. Kenosha's score is 51.
Correct.
And that's the 2022 review. Do you know what time of year they, the 2023 results obviously aren't out yet, but when does that come?
So typically the scores are entered into the system in the late spring and early summer. And then there goes through a review process. So the scores are actually verified by HRC and then released in October or early November of that same year.
Okay.
So the data we're seeing is still pretty accurate and you know, from what was entered.
What could Kenosha do? What would you like to see happen to bring that score up?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a kind of project that really takes a village, and it takes prioritization in the mayor's office. And those two pieces are really important. I think, you know, Mayor Antaramian has many amazing skills as a mayor. He's done some phenomenal work for the city. I would like for him to take this a little bit more seriously. I know that organizations like Kenosha Pride have been working with him tirelessly for years. We have entertained some conversations with him as well. And it may not just be him alone. He's got to pass some of these policies and ordinances through the city council. So the mayor has to prioritize it. The city council has to approve it and be on board. And if those two things aren't in place, it's not going to happen. So I think it boils down to education, why this is important. One of the things that I mentioned the center does earlier is we provide safe zone training. And that's not just about how to create a safe space, but it's about a person's sexual orientation, gender identity, the biases that cultures have, and why it's really important and hurtful if those individual rights aren't accepted and if they don't have the same protections as cisgender, straight folks. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with Kenosha Pride and will be more involved. I'm not saying that we can make a difference, but we can certainly level set the conversation, make sure that there is prioritization. The work that we've done with the mayor's office, in particular Vicky Selko, who's in charge of strategic initiatives there, she really got the score up, because she was a project manager who worked with all the different department heads and made sure that the policies were in place, that it got on the city council's schedule so that it could be voted for in time. But a lot of this is just networking. You know, like one of the scores is to have a LGBTQ liaison to the police department. Now, I know Kenosha had that at one point, but I noticed that that has fallen off. There's also non-discrimination laws for employment and public accommodations that are primarily around gender identity. What a lot of people don't know is that the state of Wisconsin was the very first state in the country in 1982 to create a statewide law that protects anybody for sexual orientation. So that's bi, gay, lesbians. But what is missing in the state is any type of protections for gender identity and gender expression. One of the big concepts for the MEI score is to make sure that transgender and non-binary individuals are protected.
So you mentioned some of the policies and ordinances. Do LGBTQ plus residents in Racine feel a demonstrated difference there, do you think, of that higher score?
Yeah, everybody's experience is different, right? Socioeconomics play into that, race plays into that, proximity to government, I think, plays into that, education plays into that. So I think that what the MEI score does say is that the city has gone through the steps to make sure that it's intentional and that it prioritizes the protections of LGBT people. But I'll tell you, if I were new to the area and I was considering a job offer in Kenosha or Racine, or I would look at the MEI score. That's something that the average LGBT person knows about, and we take it seriously. And so the fact that it hasn't moved, I think, is it's a subtle it could be more intentional, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And we would all like for that to happen. It's a little embarrassing.
Yes. So any next steps in terms of either Kenosha Pride or your organization to try to move that needle in Kenosha?
Yeah, absolutely. We're actively having conversations around that. We have allies on the city council. Anthony Kennedy in particular has just been really supportive. And so we will continue to advance and try and prioritize that. Now, all that said, it has to come from the mayor's office, because there are things that have to be done that only the mayor, the mayor's office, his staff, and heads of departments can do. So without that direction, it doesn't matter what community input we have.
Mm-hmm. Is there a budgetary issue to this for either community? You mentioned a liaison to the police department. Is there a cost? Is maybe that part of the factor?
That's a really good question. Not having worked in a municipality, I think it's basically time, staff time to do, which does have a cost to it. And by prioritizing this, something else may not get done. So there aren't fees or things like that. It's literally staff time and prioritization that would have a cost.
You are listening to WGTD HD 91.1 FM. This is Community Matters. I'm Jenny Tunkies, and we're talking to Barb Farrar, who's the executive director of the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin, which represents actually people all over the state, but has a great deal of outreach in Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth counties. So thanks again, Barb, for being here today. And we've been talking about the Municipal Equity Index, which is an annual review by the Human Rights Campaign. And the city of Racine has a score of 100, perfect. And Kenosha 51, so lots of work there to be done. If someone feels strongly about this, what should they do to try to promote or, I guess, encourage more activity in the city of Kenosha?
Yeah, I think they should reach out to their alders. I think that's probably the most direct and efficient way to kind of move the needle, so to speak. And, you know, any type of letter to the mayor's office or email, phone call, I think that also has weight as well. and public awareness of what's at stake in this score. So just for comparison, you mentioned that Racine has 100, Appleton has 93, Green Bay has 90, Oshkosh has 78, Racine, Milwaukee, and Madison all have 100, and then Kenosha at 51. So again, it's totally attainable. This isn't, but it does take time and effort and prioritization.
Okay, great. Thank you. So, you know, you mentioned the state and, you know, being one of the first to have some anti-discrimination laws in place. Let's talk a little bit about the state of Wisconsin right now for the LGBTQ communities and what kinds of issues you are seeing develop.
Oh my gosh, I could talk a lot about that. And I think where to start is that it's really sad that I believe that the LGBTQ community has been targeted for political gains. I really feel that it is one of those subjects that is really polarizing our communities, and I think it's intentional, because I really don't think people want to discriminate against others, but I think there's a lot of misinformation about what some of these anti-trans bills have, for example, what the impact of parental rights can be on an LGBT person. So there's a lot there. What we are seeing is the rhetoric is getting more intense, and it's coming from a lot of different levels. So for example, we're seeing young people in schools being told by their classmates that because they're LGBT, they don't deserve to live. You know, and I hate to even say that, but those are the kind of things that we just didn't hear recently. Maybe that's occurred in the past, but it seems to be heightened. And I just can't imagine that coming from somewhere else but another adult. And that's really alarming to me.
So you mentioned parental rights and that aspect of it. Can you expound on that a little bit? What are some of the issues at play that you're seeing?
Sure. Yeah. That LGBTQ people know at a very young age what their gender identity is and their sexual orientation. And there's kind of a perception that parents know best in all situations up until the young person is 18, and then they can make their own decision. We know that some young people come out as early as 3, 4, 5 years old with a gender identity that doesn't match their sex characteristics. And so if a parent denies that, it can cause severe, what we call dysphoria, where there's severe anxiety, depression, isolation, and even self-harm if that person isn't actualized to be the person that they are. Now, if you're listening to this for the first time and you've never met a trans person, you're like, what did I just say? The important part is that if you do know a trans person who is young, some of the care, like the gender-affirming care that is also under debate right now, can be a lifesaver in that young person's journey. So gender-affirming care can be as simple as a puberty blocker, which is not a harmful procedure, but delays the onset of puberty, which can be very, very challenging if you identify as the gender that doesn't align with your sex assigned at birth. And so there's tools that doctors have that can make this journey a lot easier. And of course, we're always a proponent of having a gender-affirming therapist work with a young person for at least 6 months, if not longer. And so some of those rights, even using pronouns, whether it be in classrooms that the young person prefers, all of these things are under kind of the parental rights umbrella. And denying the use of pronouns, denying puberty blockers, denying access to health care that can really help somebody who is trans align with their gender. And to not have those services can be, is life-threatening. I don't know any other way to say it. And in fact, there are organizations that are trying to have young people leave states where that is, where that's not allowed.
And are you seeing an increase in this kind of, I guess, rhetoric in the state of Wisconsin that is alarming?
Yes. Yes, we are. And I think it's coming from legislators, misinformation through social media and news outlets, and then it's trickling down into the youth. So it's kind of all facets. It's all related, I believe.
What can you as a center do to try to help educate legislators? What are you doing so that they are not passing these sort of arcane laws and impacting young people?
Yeah, well, in our community, we've got some of the best pro-LGBT legislators in the state. We have Greta Neubauer. We have Bob Wirch. I mean, we've got some really stellar representatives. We also have, just a little bit north of Kenosha, we have Robin Voss, who is on the other side, who is a little bit more a parental rights advocate type of legislator. So I think the important thing is just bring awareness, tell stories. It's one thing to talk about policy. It can seem very impersonal, but when you start telling stories about your experience, your child's experience, somebody who's close to you and how these laws are impacting them or your family or your friends, I think that's where the education really comes from.
So you do a lot of outreach. You do legislative days, I'm sure, up at the state capitol to try to educate. Are you seeing any successes, any ability to kind of change hearts and minds?
I think this is just a movement that we just have to keep educating our constituents and then let them reach out to legislators to do that kind of work. I think that people... More and more people are coming out, let's say that. Of the Gen Zers, 20% identify as LGBTQ. And that is because they have seen role models in the community. It is safer for them to come out. They have language that articulates how they're feeling, what their gender is and their sexual orientation. So more and more young people are going to be more okay with being LGBTQ. So that's the demographic that is going to change the world. As the young folks who are more open-minded get older and start voting, and they vote, you know, that generation really does vote. So I think it may take some time, but I think that's going to be the push that happens. And I don't believe that this extreme position against LGBT people, I don't think all those people will stay in office. I really don't, even in rural communities, because I think more and more people, as they come out, they're just going to, it's not going to work in their favor to have those types of beliefs.
We heard during the Roe v. Wade overturning that at least one U.S. Supreme Court justice was intending to target gay marriage. Anything more about that? Is that a concern nationally?
I think it's fairly solid, but I think everything is on the table right now. I think what's also important is that the Respect for Marriage Act that was approved, it repeals DOMA, and it really does guarantee marriage between two individuals. Even though we have protections at a federal level, when it gets to these state levels, there's a difference. There's a discretion there.
I'm Jenny Tunkies. You're listening to WGTD HD 91.1 FM, Community Matters, and I've been talking to Barb Farrar, who's Executive Director of the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin. And we've been talking a little bit about the state, national, and even local issues that are impacting the LGBTQ plus residents here in Southeastern Wisconsin. So, we had mentioned that this is June, and that makes it Pride Month. So, tell me a little bit about the importance of Pride Month.
Pride is extremely important because for many people, it's the time of year where they can go out and be seen, be who they are, celebrate. It really is a holiday for a lot of people. It is political, but it's social. It's liberating. It is a time to see people who look like you, who have similar experiences, and to just unite and just have a great time.
Wonderful. So I know there will be events in Kenosha, Racine, Walworth County. How can one find out a little bit more about those events?
Yeah, well, locally, Kenosha Pride is going to be July 8th. You can Google that. That's a Saturday this year. It's an all-day event. Kenosha Pride is one of the best small-town prides in the country. It grows every year. It's a phenomenal event, brings thousands of people together, multiple stages. It's a lot of fun. Walworth has had a Pride. I'm not sure if that's happening this year or not. Racine, we typically have an event that's more low-key. We will be posting that once it's finalized on our website, which is www.lgbtsewi.org. And you can find our events there or Facebook and Instagram page.
Great. So I want to go back a little bit to some of the services that the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin provides, and it kind of relates to, we were talking about trans issues and how young people are being impacted these days. So has that area, the need for someone to talk to, someone to bounce ideas off of, I bet that's just grown tremendously.
Yeah, it has. What's interesting, though, is that we had our largest numbers ever during the pandemic, where people really wanted to reach out, didn't want to leave their homes, young, old. We had all kinds of groups. We had a spirituality group, our elder group, and our youth groups really thrived during that time period. And now we're seeing people just wanting to get together. And, support groups are wonderful. We do a lot of one-on-ones. If anybody calls and just says, hey, I need somebody to talk to, or I'm having trouble coming out and I'd really like to just kind of share some of my ideas, then that is something that we provide. That's a priority for us. I think that what we are seeing is people kind of want to go back to a new normal, which is, you know, meeting in person. Our youth art night is one of the most highly attended events that we have. We have anywhere from 12 to 15 youth, and then parents too will come. So we have a packed house at that time. It's really great. So each month we do a different art project. We've done some watercolors with urban sketching with Racine Arts Council, and just done all kinds of cool, fun things.
That's great. Is that held at the center?
Yep, it is.
Great.
And so if things work out, we'll be doing some programming for youth in Kenosha soon. So fingers crossed that that comes through.
Great. So people can pay attention to your website to learn about those for sure. And we'll circle back to that website before we say farewell. You had also mentioned senior citizens. You've got a group that's dedicated to seniors. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. That's our 50-plus group that meets every other Saturday from 1 to 2:30. And that is a group of people. It's a social group. It's not really a support group, but they just love hanging out. They will talk about vacations. They'll talk about family. They'll talk about their coming out experiences, just kind of reflections on what it was like to be a young person in the 50s, 60s, and 70s coming out. It's a wonderful group. There's about between 12 and 15 people that attend that as well.
Now, you mentioned art nights for young people. Do you have other social mixer type events where people can get together?
Sure. In our Colorful and Connected program, we've got a weekly social that happens at Pepe's, and that group meets every Sunday at 11 o'clock, and that's exclusively for people of color who are queer or questioning. We have a kind of annual events that happen. We have a Valentine's Day event in February. Every year we do our equality prom in April or May. This year we had 98 youth from all over Southeast Wisconsin, and that was phenomenal. This summer we've got a few really cool events, but again, we don't have those solidified on the calendar yet. But some fun thing, perhaps something outdoors, a few things outdoors, I'll just say that. We are going to be having an open house, and we do what's called a Friendsgiving, which is like a Thanksgiving, but for friends. We keep busy.
Great. Now, you had mentioned that interest kind of exploded during the pandemic. What brought that on, do you think? Was that just part and parcel of people being alone and needing to reach out? What was there?
I think that's exactly it. People being homebound. We also saw the emergence of technology. I mean, Zoom literally changed the world, we had people say that our support groups were really one of the most important ways that they could get through the pandemic and reach people. For example, our spirituality group that met every Monday night, there were times when we had 20, 22, 23 people on the call. And just talking about important subjects around what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be a human? Where are we headed? What does our society look like? What are some of the beliefs that we hold as true? Where can we grow as individuals and as humans? So it was really impactful.
Wonderful. Now, I know another way that you provide some outreach is you have, I don't know if it comes out every month, but a newsletter that's fairly frequent. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Our newsletter is called To Be Perfectly Queer, which is kind of a play on words there. And we use that word queer intentionally to take back a word that has been used to hurt people in the past and even today, to bring that power back and to use that word queer to celebrate our community. It is a monthly newsletter that comes out. You can sign up on our website. You can go to just go to the LGBTSEWI.org website. There's a sign up section, and then there's a drop down for volunteering, for support groups, and to be perfectly queer.
Wonderful. And again, this is June. It's Pride Month, and there will be lots of activities. I think you said the Kenosha, the big event in Kenosha is actually in July.
Mm-hmm.
So people can get more information.
Yeah, and Milwaukee also has an amazing Pride Fest. I believe the last day is June 3rd, and it will go from 10 o'clock in the morning until, I think, midnight. You might want to double check that. But that is a wonderful event, great music, lots of stages. We will be there in a booth along with a lot of other amazing LGBTQ organizations and allies.
And Barb, speaking of allies, what can people do to support your efforts if they're allies?
Yeah, so there's a lot of conversation around whether allies is the best word. And that's funny because if you look at the true definition of being an ally, it means it's a verb. It means to take action. But sometimes people call themselves an ally without being taking action. So we want to kind of ratchet that up a little bit to an advocate. An advocate is somebody who is always on the lookout to support, you know, their friends who are people of color or themselves and LGBTQ people. We just want to make it more routine that we fight for marginalized communities. And so what can you do? Well, first of all, you can speak up at the Thanksgiving table, right? You can start to introduce concepts or people or stories of people that you know so that it becomes more familiar. You can invite us to do a safe zone training at your church or your business. If people need kind of that baseline education about what the experience is actually like, that's what that training is for. You can also, you know, write letters, but mainly it's in your social circles. If somebody says something derogatory, don't just stand by. That's not the verb. We need an action. So advocate for your friends and family who are part of the community, and yourself if you're part of the community.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Again, Barb Farrar, Executive Director of the LGBTQ Center of Southeastern Wisconsin. Thank you so much for being here today and talking to us about June being Pride Month, about the Municipal Equity Index, and all the great work you're doing. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.